This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One. Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
Studio is a cutting-edge, trend-setting 30,000 square foot virtual video production studio located in Tampa, Florida. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me and associate producer Jennifer Simonson for a conversation with director and VIEW CEO Tim Moore. Moore shares fascinating insights about his virtual video production studio that employs experiential reality, the frontier iteration beyond AR and VR technology that includes motion control robotics and advanced motion capture technology.
It was a large room full of people, all kinds, and they had all arrived at the same building at more or less the same time, and they were all free, and they were all asking themselves the same question.
My name is Tim Moore. I'm the CEO of Diamond VIEW Studios, and I live in Tampa Bay, Florida.
So Tampa Bay Studios is more than just a studios. Kind of doesn't exist in some respects, right?
Yeah. What we're in today is a virtual production studio, which is one of just a few in the world right now. And these are becoming very popular very fast.
So green screen is passé?
Yeah, you could say that. Green screen is the old dinosaur technology that you used to use to go in and imagine what would be in the background, but now you can see it in real time and render photorealistic backgrounds.
Wow. So if you and I stepped in that surround space and you flipped a switch, we could be literally in Rome or wherever.
You got any virtual world you can imagine. It's kind of like a big IMAX theater, and instead of teleporting to the location, you can teleport the location to you.
Interesting. So not like in the old days in Hollywood where they would have the movie projector screen in the background. This one, you fall for the illusion of that person or people being in that scene, right? Standing in front of a screen.
The big difference to this technology is not only do you have this massive image in the background that's really high resolution, but the image moves in relation to the camera. So it's three-dimensional.
Really? Oh,
and that's what really gives you the effect that you're there.
So right now, there are no cameras set up. If they were here, where would they typically be placed? Anywhere?
Well, the cameras move typically in this area right here with the black floor.
So imagine a proscenium stage, and we're standing on top of the orchestra pit, and behind you would be the 360 screen.
You got it, yeah. And the reason why the camera mainly stays in the space is if you look up, we have what's called a star constellation, and that's an infrared reflective tracking system. And so on top of the camera, it can track its position in 3D space down to the inch. So if the camera moves 5 feet to the left, the image on the screen will move 5 feet to the right.
Wow.
So just like your eye as you move throughout a space, it does the same effect.
Since we're not filming a scene right now, there's nobody out there. So you've moved the background scene, but the people on camera are stationary, right?
Correct.
It's as if the camera is walking around the people.
Exactly. Yeah, the perspective is changing.
And I imagine focus must be part of the equation, right?
Yeah, part of the illusion is that you're always focusing on the foreground or mid-ground. We never tend to focus directly on the screen. And so as long as you're doing that, it's really hard to tell that it's not real.
And so you're focused on the subject, but background is not this blurry scene. It's still crisp, right?
Yeah, it's crisp.
When was this developed? How? And how did you get to be one of the cutting edge people?
Well, this was really popularized last year, right before the pandemic. The Star Wars series, The Mandalorian, came out with it. And the reason they did it is because the main character is fully reflective. And so if you think about a traditional green screen environment, it's very difficult to get the reflections out of this suit. And so they thought, hey, why don't we do it in real time with these massive LEDs? And as they continue to develop the technology, they realize, you know, this could be used for any kind of film or video.
So give us a word picture of what we are seeing right now deconstruct.
So this is an LED volume, which is similar to an IMAX theater, but it has a fully enclosed ceiling on it as well. And so the purpose of this is to create photorealistic backgrounds that instead of having to go to the location, you could shoot it in the studio.
So when you're rolling, when we look up at the ceiling, that's video too?
Yep, that's video as well. And Brody, you want to play something back here? I'm going to show you an example, but the idea with this is that you would practically create the scene. So if we're in a street, you know, we might have a piece of the street here on the ground, and then you would digitally extend that scene to be whatever you want. And so instead of having to fly to Paris to see the Eiffel Tower, we put the Eiffel Tower in the background. That takes out a big logistic and cost of travel. And then some of the foreground elements, like the flower cart that might be on the side of the street, now that's created here in the studio.
How interesting. Because one of the deal breakers for filming, as you know, is location cost. If even once you're on the ground there, of the permits and fees to film.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a pandemic, you know, it's very difficult to travel right now, much less with hundreds of crew and cast. So to be able to logistically bring any environment here into the studio. I'll just give you one example, being here in Florida is shooting on the beach. You know, it's a beautiful scenic, and that's what everyone wants to do when they come to Florida. But the challenge is it's very bright. Some days it rains, it's hot, the talent is squinting trying to see the teleprompter. So to put the beach on this type of background and to be able to control all of those elements is a big advantage.
Interesting. Do you have an archival library, a lexicon of locations?
We have what we're calling the digital backlot, which is all of these environments that we've accumulated over shooting for 6 months now.
So it's what you guys have generated.
Correct, yes. A lot of these backgrounds are built in Game Engine, and so we can customize them fully in 3D space. So what we're looking at now is a scene from, is this Australia, Brody? So in Australia. And so as he's loading this up here, you'll see the physics are coming online. The trees are actually swaying in the wind. But he can pick up any of these trees and move them anywhere he wants. You know, he can change the lighting. So the scene is fully...
So he could change it to late afternoon, you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. So you see this tree over here on the right?
Yeah.
So he's moving that around.
Wow.
And as he's moving it, the lighting is changing because it's getting real-time.
So he could manipulate pretty much anything in this scene? Or?
Yep. So you see he's pushing the tree through the ground there. So now imagine if you were to go to a forest and you'd say, hey, I really want to do this shot, but this tree's in the way. That's going to take a little time to get that practically, to cut down that tree, change the lighting.
Right.
Here, we can do all that in real time.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How about right now, it's almost midday, it looks like, by the sun location.
Yeah.
Can he manipulate towards sunset?
Yeah, he can change not only time of day, but the direction of the light. And so now if you think about this, if we just had an image of the Eiffel Tower, we're stuck with whatever time of day that was shot, whatever crowd was there. Now in Game Engine, we can make it daytime, nighttime, you know, really make this whatever we want, which
is great.
That's
crazy. So the shadows we see casting as the day progresses, that's done computer. That wasn't somebody on location originally filming that for 20 hours.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. And so if you wanted to match the scene to that lighting too, now if the sun's on the left-hand side, we move all our lights to the left-hand side. And so the same kind of shadows you're seeing on the background, we can do on the actor. So it's
a very
great illusion. Yeah. It's just all about matching the two, the digital and the physical world. Yeah, this is a new thing called XR. So yeah, I'm sure you've heard of VR, which is virtual reality, AR, which is augmented reality.
Yeah.
XR is extended reality, and it's the relationship between the physical and the virtual world.
Wow.
So the physical elements, like our actors, are here in real-time, real space. But the digital world is this extension you see here, and that's what really allows this to scale.
So when he was just cruising down the river a moment ago, could you set up an illusion where your actors are on the river, going down the river?
Yep, you can. We can even put the physics of the ripples in the water so that as the boat If we're not seeing that boat actually physically touch that, we can see the effect of the boat with the water
manipulating
trail.
The water.
Yeah.
Wow.
So very, very interesting stuff. And what you see too right now, we're looking at a few trees.
Yeah.
They have actual physical decay to them. So most things that are digital, they're not continuous. They're
kind
always
stylistic.
New.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with decay, what it allows is if we were to sit here and look at this image for a month, the leaves on the tree would fall. And then where they fall, they would stay at or get brushed out in the water. So this is very similar to real life.
So now he's moving mountains.
Physically, and yes, and virtually.
Yeah.
So.
How about clouds? You have the cloud static in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Can he bring in a thunderhead? Or?
Oh, yeah. We can manipulate all of the rain, lightning. Those things take a little more time to add the physics in it, but it's, yeah, totally doable.
So far to date, how have you actually literally utilized this stage set?
Well, all kind of things. I mean, our main body of work is in short form commercial work. And so one of the first commercials we did here was for Mercedes-Benz. And for that commercial, they barged a car from Germany here to the studio.
Wow.
And we were able to get the real-time reflections off the car for the background, the scene, and do fake driving shots.
So the car was literally right there on stage.
You got it, yeah.
And what background did you have? Where was it?
All kind of places. You know, one of them was kind of this garden scene in Italy, and so it was a maze of a garden. And imagine having to travel the crew or the car to those locations. It'd take forever.
Oh, yeah.
So here we're doing Italy, and then we're back in the U.S. and then all over the world just in seconds.
So backlot is history.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be a need for location-based shooting, but the fact that you can do 90 to 95% of it here in the volume really speeds up the timeline and cuts the cost.
So looking forward, would it be likely that you would be doing major long-form productions here?
That's really what this technology is centered around right now. But what I believe is that the industry is going to shift to all type of video content, like commercial and branded and short form. And so our focus is to stay in more of that long tail of the market, while some of the bigger studios focus on the really high-end long format.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So get your own niche.
Yeah.
In the short term, what are you doing? How is it working?
Well, we're learning every day. You know, we've been getting more and more into entertainment. So we just did a music video for Enrique Iglesias and 21 Pilots. And we're starting to get requests from live events as well. Like we just did WWE. And so as we look at the applications to this technology, we're learning new ones every day. And I think that this is just only going to become more and more the normal of what you see on TV.
A couple more examples of what you're learning state of the state.
Well, one of the things that we found out is when we built the LED volume, there's really no manuscript online of how you engineer something like this. So we found out that the ceiling, if you enclose it fully, you get a lot of challenges like heat load because the heat can't dissipate. You block all of your tracking. And so we actually engineered this panel. This is a patented panel that we created where every other pixel line is removed. And so from here, you see it, you don't realize that. But the advantage is not only can the heat go out, but the acoustics are better.
This
is a parabolic, so it's like a drum. If you get in there, it accelerates all the sound. So it helps with that. But the really interesting thing we've done is these tracking stars that you see up here, we've integrated them into the panel. And so if you look on the center, you'll see dots every now and then.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And that actually is telling the camera where its position is in space. And so this is a novel. No one's ever integrated a optical tracker into an LED panel before. So we think as a product, that's going to be something that a lot of people are going to want.
Is that proprietary at this point?
It is, yeah.
So you're the go-to guy for that.
We got it if you need it, yeah.
And how do you get the word out in this world today?
Well, you know, the good thing is we're so hyper-connected that even when we did some of our first shoots, you know, it went around the world really quick of, hey, this technology now is here in Tampa Bay. And thanks to our marketing department who's done a great job. But I think that the real way to scale this is once you start seeing the adoption of the masses of studios. Right now, this is still leading technology. Only a few studios in the world are doing this. But there's 55,000 studios around the world.
Wow.
And in the same way that digital cameras came from film and went to digital and never went back, studios were once analog.
Right.
Like we were talking about before, you paint green walls and imagine what it is. Every studio in the world will be digital in the next 10 to 15 years.
Wow.
And so as the adoption rate accelerates, we're hoping to be more and more a part of that conversation.
Are you getting calls from studios around America that want
to
come?
We are. And not even just America. I mean, internationally, in India, South Africa, Netherlands, Australia, we're getting so many requests now to help other studios build theirs. That's almost been more demand than our current studio is other studios wanting to do this.
So you might be hiring a few more yes. bodies here.
Yeah, we are. In fact, we added 9 team members in the past 10 weeks. So mm-hmm. we're about a team member a week that we're onboarding. So.
And on the back end, the computer generation, does that entail a lot of coding?
It does. You know, this is a game engine at heart. It's called Unreal Engine. And so it's built to design video games. But the more and more filmmakers like myself are using it, they're adopting the technology to make it more user-friendly. Mm-hmm. But right now, there's quite a bit of skill involved in doing some of the things like you saw when he's moving stuff around. It isn't as easy as just drag and drop. And so,
yeah. you know, it looked like that.
Yeah, he makes it look easy. But it's, you know, some of the stuff takes quite a bit of skill.
That's so cool. What secrets are you holding back? What do you want
well,
to share?
Well, here's the big secret. Okay. You know, you could do this anywhere in the world, but we've decided to do it here in Tampa Bay. And the reason is this is such an emerging market that's the best kept secret in the U.S. right now. And I think the reason why is, you know, as you look at the dynamic shift that COVID has created, you don't need to live in New York to work in New York anymore. You don't need to live in San Francisco to work in San Francisco anymore. And so now in Tampa Bay, we're starting to attract an international audience. We can work next to the beach and next to the rivers that we love and not pay a fortune to be here. And so I think that's something that's allowed us to scale is this. If you look at some of those markets like New York and California, they were shut down while we were building. And so that's been a big advantage to us is, hey, you know, Florida's given the green light that we're going to keep building, we're going to keep growing, and I think Tampa Bay is a great place to live.
That's so cool. Are you getting any support from the state?
We haven't yet, you mm-hmm. know.
But possible.
Yeah, Florida traditionally hasn't incentivized the film industry in the way that Georgia and California have. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that, you know, it's a low-cost state to operate. And so our advantage really is in the cost margin. That's where we've found a lot of incentives.
And again, as you alluded to, looping back to our life shift due mm-hmm. to COVID, isn't it fascinating the positives
oh, yeah.
that have come out and are still coming out?
Yeah.
Everything will never go back to as it was.
Yeah. I mean, we've just accelerated the evolution of technology as sooner or later we were always going to end up doing Zoom calls instead of mm-hmm. face-to-face meetings. But now because of the pandemic, that's cut that timeline in half. And that's going to be the acceptable way to do business for a lot of industries.
And again, it used to be, like you said, you had to be Miami, New York, or LA. And now does not matter.
Mm-hmm.
How yeah. fascinating.
One of the interesting shifts that's happening right now is this concept of the metaverse. And the metaverse is what people are calling the Internet 2.0. You know, in 1995, there was only 15,000 people connected to the Internet because the fact that you'd have a personal computer and went to Circuit City and got the Netscape Navigator browser and, you know, were connected to dial-up. You know, that was there was only a few early adopters. But today on the metaverse, there's 1.7 billion users because the metaverse is game engine. So people that play Fortnite and any kind of video game, it's a video simulation like what you're seeing with Zoom calls. And so we're stepping into this new era where the internet will no longer be two-dimensional pages that you go to different addresses. There'll be this type of thing, virtual worlds, where you go communicate with a class of 100 students, and it doesn't feel like a clunky web page. Mm-hmm. It'll feel like a real-life simulation. And so what you're seeing now is the cusp of what's coming.
So like my assistant and I, we were in a Zoom presentation at a university, and it's on the desktop screen.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying, if we did future Zoom, we would be in a room with the students.
Yes.
Though they're only virtually there.
You're right. I mean, what we've done is we've adopted the Zoom call down to the size of the monitor. And so if you think about it, you're looking at an array of small thumbnails that represent that person.
Right.
In this kind of environment, you could use a life-size avatar of that person and be communicating in real time, in real space. And so the idea of a multi-user simulation in real time is going to feel like you're actually there without having to be there. And that's what Zoom of the future will
be. But so the students on the screen would be real in real time.
Yes.
But somewhere else.
Yeah.
I love it. So you're what, 30 years old?
Yeah, 32.
Okay. So you never knew life without the internet.
Yeah,
right?
I was one of those digital natives where was birthed and there was a TV on the wall already, you know, and I think that's how a lot of people are coming in to see this technology now. It's always been around. Mm-hmm. That's their view of the world.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yes.
A baseline based on assumptions of X and Y. So when did you get it and how did you connect with the cyber world?
Well, I got fascinated with this around COVID just because of the essential.
But going way back, you know,
I guess my fascination really begins when I was 15. I went on a missions trip and I was the video guy. You know, they gave me a camera and said, hey, can you record what happens here? And I fell in love with it. You know, I thought it was so powerful to tell stories. And so I've been on a journey.
That was pre-HD, right?
That was VHS camera.
Yeah.
that was pre-digital. So I fell in love with it and never looked back. And it's really just recently that my passion for video has now turned into technology as well. You know, seeing how you can tell stories like this, you know, it's just an amazing opportunity that we have right now.
How did you financially able to pull this off? This is quite an expense.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing we did is a kind of a feasibility study before we did this was what is the cost of the LED? And we found out that it's astronomical. It was way more than we could afford. Mm-hmm. And so what we ended up doing is actually what's called first principles, is that we bought from the factory all of the original components. So this is something like if you look at what Elon Musk does, he was trying to buy rockets from the Russians. They were too expensive. So he builds his own factory and buys the rocket powder, builds the...
Right.
So this is the same thing. You know, So you
manufactured the screen.
We assembled it. We got all of the core components for it and then assembled this all together.
How long did that take?
It was about a 3-month process. And prior to that, we had made smaller renditions of this. And so that was about a 6-month process of our R&D.
Is that kind of like beta testing?
Yes.
Make sure you were
just make sure before you get this scale that you didn't screw something up.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you mess up at this scale, then the math is vicious.
Exponential failure.
Yes. Yeah.
Hi, this is Jennifer Simonson. I'm taking over the interview momentarily. This photo right here, did you go to a location or is this done on the computer? Is this created on the computer?
This is computer generated. So this is a game engine image that you're seeing here, which is in 3D space, and it has all of the virtual physics of the physical world.
That's amazing. So if a client comes to you and they say, I want to be in the Grand Canyon, you would create that. You wouldn't necessarily take a photo. And...
Correct. Okay. Yeah, the capacity of our computers right now can create digital twins of physical environments. So instead of having to go capture that on a photo, bring it in, stretch it to the geometry of this screen, we can go into Game Engine and we can build anything and make it almost just as real as the physical location.
Okay. Wow. And so is that part of your offering, is to create an environment for?
Yep, we design and build as well. A lot of our clients lean on us to create these environments.
Okay. And are there any other studios in the United States doing this right now?
You know, they're just starting to emerge. So the big one is Lucasfilms in California. They're the ones that did Star Wars, and ILM helped build their studio. But there's two or three right now that have just come online, Gum Studios in New York. And I think another one in Atlanta. So we're starting to see this progression towards virtual production studios, but still, just a handful in the world.
When you said, you know, artists come in and will they do like quote unquote concerts from right here and they'll have the concert, the people around them?
Yep. You can do a live simulation of an audience and do a concert just like you were, you know, in Madison Square Garden or anywhere in the world.
Cool. What's your favorite project so far?
I mean, the Mercedes-Benz one was really eye-opening to us, but I'd have to say that the WWE project we did recently just opened up my eyes to the possibility of where you could take a live event. And I think that's kind of thrilling that, you know, live events have typically been bound to the location they're at. Mm-hmm. And so in the middle of a broadcast, to be able to change that location is an exciting power to have.
So did you have wrestlers right here? Did you build the ring?
Yeah, right here in the ring, yeah.
Wow. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me today.
So to learn more about your world, where would you direct somebody?
So if you want to learn more about this virtual production studio, you can visit viewstudio.io. That's VUstudio.io. And you can also check out our production company, DiamondView.io. That's Diamond and then V-I-E-W.io for that.
It was a large room full of people, all kinds. And they had all arrived at the same building at more or less the same time. And they were all free. And they were all asking themselves the same question. What?
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives. And Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.